Well, good morning.
Good morning.
Morning. I'm glad to see you out. I'm glad that you're here. We do have visitors, some returning. We certainly appreciate that. We do have a few of our regular number that are out with sickness, but everybody seems to be getting a little bit better as we head toward springtime here in Clarksville, Tennessee. I asked Alva if he was aware of this song. He was not. This tells you how old I am. This may be relatively narrow as far as the title. You're so vain. You probably think this song is about you. Great line. Great line. Carly Simon, 1970s. She wrote the song and secretly held on to who it was about for years. Warren Beatty, she said, was one of the guys. Now, I know Warren Beatty for some of you means nothing, but really these names are important, and I'm glad you're paying attention. But I will tell you something. This song was popular about the time that I began. I don't know if I was 10 years old, something like that, 8, 9, 10. And I heard this song, but I also heard preachers talking about vanity of vanities, all is vanity, says the preacher. And I didn't understand what was going on because this seemed like two completely different things, right? So the idea of vanity, as I understood it, was the Carly Simon kind of definition, which is someone who thinks too much of themselves, someone who's maybe gotten too big for their britches, right? They think they're the important one. It's a narcissistic thing. This is just a dictionary definition of it, an excessively high opinion of one's appearance, abilities, or worth. So she was singing about someone who was so vain. So then when the preacher would talk about vanity, he seemed to be talking about something completely different. He wasn't talking about Warren Beatty or Carly Simon or any of them. So this lesson this morning is to get to the heart of the book of Ecclesiastes and the idea of the vanity used there and what it means for us as we go forward. So the vanity that we are talking about today means of no value or meaningless. Of no value or meaningless. And certainly, I'm going to imagine we've all gone through situations where we began to understand that and we're aware of it in some way. So just open your Bibles to Ecclesiastes. We're going to be there all morning long, and we will do quite a bit of reading. I'm a little short getting started, so I'll go as quickly as I can, and that may mean some pretty quick reading, so follow along if you can. Just one point of privilege here. Daniel Green is a fine young man. Stay with us after the sermon today, and he will be brought into the fold as one of our servants. We're very excited about that. So be ready for that. So let's get to it. If we've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm just full of 70s movie references today. Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 2 says this. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities. All is vanity. What does a man gain by all the toil in which he toils under the sun? A generation goes, a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. It's all vanity. That's what the preacher says. Well, I want to, right off the bat here, make sure that we all understand this is Solomon. It has become kind of popular in recent times to say that word there that says preacher means collector or maybe even confessor. I don't know if you've heard somebody say this. There was a video going around by something called the Bible Project a few years ago that made this argument that this was not Solomon. But really, if you take Solomon out of the picture, you ruin the whole book. Because the idea is that Solomon, who was the wisest man to ever live, would take his great wisdom and examine the worldly things. And then, of course, he would end up with the final analysis that all things are vanity. So if you hear someone say that this is the collector, if they take Solomon out of the equation, they've really broken down the meaning of the verse. Solomon had asked for wisdom. In 1 Kings chapter 4, 29, God gave Solomon wisdom and understanding beyond measure, breadth of mind like the sand on the seashore, so that Solomon's wisdom surpassed the wisdom of all the people of the east and all the wisdom of Egypt. For those of you who know the story, Solomon becomes king of Israel, and God asks him, what does he want? Instead of saying riches and all the things, the carnal things of this world, he says, oh God, your people are great, and he asks for wisdom to govern God's people. So God gave him not only wisdom, but wealthy things as well. So Solomon he was the wisest man to ever live. He's the richest man to ever live. So here's the setup. The rest of the book of Ecclesiastes is about the wisest, richest man who ever lived partying hard and seeing if there's anything worth it. He's going to build everything. He's going to have everything. He's going to own everything. He's going to do it all. He's going to examine it by his wisdom, greater than all men. And he's going to say, here's what is fantastic about the world. This is why you should love the world. This is why you should know that you can find happiness and salvation in the world. No. Vanity of vanities. All these things we're doing. Everything we do in this world without God is vanity. Everything we do in this world when we are not a Christian is vanity. We are serving and serving and serving, and there will be no end outcome that is positive because we are not in the Lord. So Ecclesiastes 2, verse 9. Look at Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 9. And this is, a summary of the book. Because Solomon is going to go through this list of all these things he had done. Again, richest man that ever lived, wisest man that ever lived. If you talk to someone who's involved in drugs or alcohol, one of the things they'll tell you is, my problem is I don't have enough money. The problem is I don't have enough money. The problem is I don't have enough drugs or alcohol, but you got to have money to get drugs and alcohol. Solomon didn't have that problem. Did you ever think of that? Solomon didn't ever have to drink the bad stuff. Solomon didn't ever have to substitute. There were no stems in Solomon's life. Anybody? Just checking. He went all the way, and he had the money to do it. So, but he keeps talking about the fact that he retained his wisdom. He was able to do it while as a world traveler and still examine the value of it. Look at verse 9, Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 9. So I became great and surpassed all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also, my wisdom remained with me. See that right there? And whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I kept my heart from no pleasure, for my heart found pleasure in all my toil, and this was my reward for all my toil. Then I considered all that my hands had done and the toil I had expended by doing it. And behold, all was vanity and a striving after wind, and there was nothing to be gained under the sun. Do it all, Solomon says. It has no eternal meaning. It has no lasting meaning. Look down to verse 18. Look at verse 18 for just a moment. I hated all my toil in which I toil under the sun, seeing that I must leave it to the man who will come after me. And who knows whether he will be wise or a fool? Yet he will be master of all which I toiled and used my wisdom under the sun. This also is vanity. So I turned about and gave my heart up to despair over all the toil of my labors under the sun. Solomon says, I do all these things, and I'm going to give it to my son or my child. It may not even be the heir to my kingdom, and they're going to do with it. And they may be completely dumb. They may not know how to rule. They may ruin all that I give them. But there's nothing that can be done about it. At the very end of the chapter here, Solomon says what I think is the most meaningful part of it that doesn't have to do with God per se. There is nothing better, verse 24, so I'm in verse 24 of Ecclesiastes chapter 2. There is nothing better for a person than he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil. This also I saw is from the hand of God. For apart from him, who can eat or who can have enjoyment? For to the one who pleases him, God has given a wisdom and knowledge and joy, but to the sinner he's given the business of gathering and collecting, only to give it to one who pleases God. This also is vanity and striving after the wind. You know what Solomon is saying here? Do a hard day's work, earn a hard day's wage, and enjoy a meal with somebody. That's the best thing you can do. You think about that for just a moment. You think about what we've done here this morning, that community. There's nothing better than a potluck. One of the young girls, I can't remember which one it was, last time I had a potluck, was just so excited. Yay, potluck. We're going to have all that good food. Well, why do we enjoy that? Because we enjoy being together. We enjoy that part of God-given appetite. There is nothing better than for us to have to get together and have a potluck or have any kind of communal gathering. And Solomon says that's the best you can do. Because in that moment, you've earned your hamburger. When you've earned your hamburger and you sit down and it's good, and you've got that brown mustard on there, and you've got lettuce and a good fresh tomato, maybe bacon. Anybody? Nobody? Making you hungry? When you don't owe for that hamburger, and it's your hamburger, and you can eat it any way you want, and you cook it the way you want, and you put on when you want, and you sit there and you have it, and it is good, and you're at peace with your family and your fellow Christians, and you talk and you laugh and you enjoy. That's it. That's the best you can do. And you do it with God. You do it with, you bring God into your celebration. You bring God into your life. His Spirit dwells with you. And you've got it all. You've got the best there is. Of all the vanity of Ecclesiastes, the best you can do is eat and drink and find enjoyment in your toil. It's from the hand of God. So Solomon, who goes through this idea of being a kind of world traveler, he's examining the world and finds that there's nothing better than to have a meal after you've earned it. Take a look now. We're going to look at some various pieces within the book of Ecclesiastes. So if Ecclesiastes 2 is a summary, now we're going to look at some individual things. Let's take a look here at Ecclesiastes chapter 5 and verse 1. So we're going to look at kind of the Proverbs-y things about Ecclesiastes, and I promise I'll go as quickly as I can, and take a look at things we can learn, things we can know from the wisdom of Solomon. Ecclesiastes 5, verse 1. Guard your steps when you go to the house of God. To draw near to listen is better than to offer the sacrifice of fools, for they do not know what they're doing, know that they are doing evil. Do not be not rash with your mouth, nor let your heart be hasty to utter a word before God. God is in heaven and you are on earth. Therefore, let your words be few. A dream comes with much busyness and a fool's voice with many words. You see what he's saying here? Respect God. Have fear for God. Do not go into God's house. The sacrifice of fools is many words. When we come before God and we worship Him, we need to do so with reverence. We need to do so with an understanding. I love that phrase. I am on earth, and He is in heaven. Are you showing reverence for God today? Have you humbled yourself before God today? Have you realized who you are in relationship to the God of heaven, the righteous one, the just one, the ruler of all this world and all this nation and every universe that there is existed? He created them by speaking them into existence. Are you humble enough to realize that when you bend your knee in prayer? What the book of Ecclesiastes teaches us is all these other things may be vanity, but I need to understand I have a relationship with God, and I need to understand what that relationship is. And that is one that I am to treat God with reverence. Well, I'm also not to lie to God. I think this goes hand in hand with what's said here. Say in the same book, Ecclesiastes chapter 5, look at verse 4. Verse 4. When you make a vow to God, do not delay paying it, for He has no pleasure in fools. Pay what you owe. It is better that you should not vow than that you should vow and not pay. Let not your mouth lead you into sin, and do not say before the messenger that it was a mistake. Why should God be angry at your voice and destroy the work of your hands? For many dreams increase and words grow many. There is vanity, for God is the one you must fear. You ever get caught in something and thought to yourself, oh Lord, if you'll just get me out of this one. Oh Lord, if you'll just make a way for me to get back, I'll serve you. I'll be in the church house door every time it's open. Solomon says you need to be careful with that, because there's a bunch of you out there that I've seen take a lot of vows and not fulfill them. We're the same way. Don't say to yourself to God, I will do this thing and then not do it. That's what the text says there. It's better to not have vowed than to have vowed and not completed it. Notice that messenger there. You know what that means? That means I've proclaimed that I will do something, and now the Lord has come to settle accounts. He sent His messenger, and He said, Jason over here said he would do so-and-so. I'm come to collect. When that messenger comes, don't say, oh, it was a mistake. Do not take the Lord's name in vain. Don't take the Lord's name in vain. Don't make any vows in vain. Treat God with the reverence He deserves, not in vanity. You understand what I mean by that? Don't treat God as a casual thing. Don't make promises casually to God. Realize that if I say I'm going to do something for God, I am saying it to the Creator of heaven and earth. And make sure that I don't lie to God. None is righteous. No, not one. Tonight we're going to talk about that in our lesson. I mentioned the idea of grace we're going to talk about. Ecclesiastes 7:20, surely there's not a righteous man on earth who does good and never sins. Romans chapter 3, verse 10 and 12 kind of quote that. What does this mean? It means that Solomon is saying there's no one who's equal to God. There's no one who is righteous enough to stand before God and say, Lord, you got to let me in. I've kept the law. I have done everything you please. I've never sinned in my life. There's no such thing. And I think in remembering that we're not equal to God, we need to realize that we're also sinners and we're not righteous amongst each other. I think sometimes we like to think, well, okay, I know I can't be righteous before God, but at least I'm better than insert tax collector here. If you know why I'm saying that, you know why that's the wrong idea to have. Because not only am I not righteous before God, I'm not righteous before men. I'll tell you how I know that. Look at this verse in chapter 7, Ecclesiastes 7. This is one of my favorite little verses. And this is kind of in that Proverbs-y section that we talked about. Look at chapter 7 and verse 21. Ecclesiastes 7, 20 and 21. Well, let's start with verse 20 since it talks about what we're dealing with. Surely there's not a righteous man on earth who does good and never sins. Do not take to heart all the things people say, lest you hear your servant cursing you. Here's the thing. We all have said something about one another that it's when it's taken out of context and a little mustard is put on it and thrown back in our face. Jason said so-and-so about David Brown, or he said so-and-so about Truman Brown, and Truman Brown hears that. Well, Truman Brown, why would Jason say something like that? Slow your roll. First of all, you don't know so-and-so said anything. But you need to understand, you know what we've all done? I promise you, I have said things about people in this room that, taken out of context, I would regret. Maybe not even taken out of context, I would regret. I am not a holy person. I do my best, but I am not some righteous person that does not make mistakes. But listen to what he says here. Do not take to heart all the things people say, lest you hear your servant cursing you. Don't listen so hard. Don't be so interested in what they might have said. Your heart knows that many times you yourself have cursed others. Man, God just takes all the fun out of all this, doesn't He? Yes, also takes all the drama. I don't need to be listening to find out what you've said about me. I need to be busy about doing the Lord's work. And if I do hear someone say something about me, I don't need to take it that seriously because I've done the same thing before. And I think I'm a righteous person. I think I'm a good person. I want a good relationship with people. Your heart knows many times you yourself have cursed others. We're all sinners before a holy God. And we all need grace and we all need forgiveness. And we need grace and we need forgiveness for each other because sometimes we say dumb stuff. Now, let me add something right here. I assure you, more of the things that hurt people in churches are things that are not said originally or not said in the way that they're intended. Because that whisperer, we talked about that last week, when that whisperer gets a hold of something and turns it back around, it's some other thing. Be careful what you listen for. And be humble enough not to get too excited because you're a sinner too. And so we all are. And so we are before God. One other bit of practical knowledge here comes from chapter 10, Ecclesiastes chapter 10, verse 8. Ecclesiastes chapter 10 and verse 8. And this is how there are kind of proverby sections in Ecclesiastes. He who digs a pit will fall into it. A serpent will bite him who breaks through a wall. He who quarries stones is hurt by them, and he who splits a log is endangered by them. This is very true. You ever done tree work, lumber work? That is very, very dangerous business. You literally can lose your life. The ropes and the different things that you're dealing with, you can hurt yourself real quick doing those kind of things. And notice that it says when you dig a pit, you have the danger of falling into it. That's very true. Just from a practical sense, we need to pay attention to those things. It says in verse 10, if the iron is blunt and one does not sharpen the edge, he must use more strength, but wisdom helps one to succeed. You know what the most dangerous knife you have is? The dull one. That's Clarence Sage, Buster Sage, circa 1968. Sharpen that knife, son. Because that dull knife, what do you got to do with it? You got to pull, you got to yank. What happens when it finally breaks loose? Well, it could be the artery in your leg. I'm not making this up. It could be something in your hand. Take time to sharpen your instrument and you can use it more effectively. You as a Christian have the same duty. If you're a Bible class teacher, if you're a minister, if you're just a personal worker who has people in your home, sharpen your sword. Be better and be more effective at what you're trying to do. Take time to sharpen your sword. And be careful that you do the thing, that you be careful in work that is dangerous. Ecclesiastes chapter 11, we're making pretty good time here. Ecclesiastes chapter 11, cast your bread upon the waters for you'll find it after many days. I love this verse. You ever worry about maybe I gave so-and-so some money and maybe they bought some booze with it? Guess what? Maybe they did. You ever thought to yourself, I bought food for those people. I donated for food for those people. They may not be all as Christian as they ought to be. They may not be. Do it anyway. Cast your bread on the waters. God has blessed us. Let me be a blessing to someone else. Well, does that mean they're going to turn and walk down the aisle and be baptized? No. But they might. But they might be more open to being invited to church services because I bought them a hamburger. Cast your bread on the waters. He's saying don't worry about it. You just put it out there. God will put it to use. Cast your bread on the waters. You will find it after many days. He's saying you'll get it back. Give a portion to seven or even eight, for you know not what disaster may happen on earth. Be kind to someone. Karen may be poor and I may be wealthy. If Karen needs something, I need to give it to her without hesitation. Because guess what might happen in 10 years? Things might turn around and she may be the wealthy one and I may be in need of service. It'll come back to you. Ecclesiastes 11:4. I had to put this in there. He who observes the wind will not sow. He who regards the clouds will not reap. So, you know what he's saying here? He said, if I wait for the perfect time where it has just rained enough and it's just dry enough now, oh, but you know, it might rain tomorrow. Oh, man, couldn't plant today. A week later, boy, it's been wet. I wish it would dry out. Oh, man, it gets dry all of a sudden. Well, I better, it's raining again, sorry. There's never a better time to do the Lord's work than now. Don't look at the weather. Don't look at the sun. Don't look at the rain. So, parable of the sower. What did he do to prepare the soil? Not a thing. He just sowed it. Sowed it. Path, sowed it. Thorns, sowed it. Hard, sowed it. Good, sowed it. Don't look, just sow. We cannot know how God works. Take a look at Ecclesiastes chapter 11 and verse 5. As you do not know the way the spirit comes to the bones in the womb of a woman with child, so you do not know the work of God who makes everything. Man, we're having kids as quick as we can have them, apparently. I think we've got about 18 families expecting. No. I think it's four, though. I think it's four as best I can remember. We don't know how that works. Now, some scientists say, well, you have a zygote and blah, 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 and you think, and there's fluid and things and stuff and ultrasounds. I don't know what's in there. We're men. We don't know. We don't know. It's one thing to say, we know God does something. We know God created the world. We know God this. We know God forgives sins. But we don't really know how it works in a really, really, really way. But we have to trust that he does work. And he works today. Finally, look at Ecclesiastes chapter 12. I'm just going to read this real quickly. And then I'll the lesson will be yours. Ecclesiastes chapter 12, the end of the book. Remember also your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come. The years draw near of which you will say, I have no pleasure in them. Before the sun, the light, and the moon, the stars are darkened. The clouds return after the rain. In the day when the keepers of the house tremble, the strong men are bent. The grinders cease because they are few. And those who look through the windows are dimmed. The doors in the street are shut. When the sound of the grinding is low, one rises up at the sound of a bird. And all the daughters of song are brought low. They are afraid also of what is high. Terror is in the way. Almond tree blossoms. The grasshopper drags itself along. Desire fails because man is going to his eternal home. And the mourners go about in the streets. Before the silver cord is snapped, the golden bowl is broken. The golden bowl is broken, or the pitcher is shattered at the fountain. The wheel broken at the cistern. And dust returns to the earth as it was. The spirit returns to God who gave it. Vanity of vanity, says the preacher. All is vanity. As a young man, I had no idea what that verse was about. If you're like me, you realize the grasshopper thing. You realize the desire thing. You realize the silver cord. I used to think they meant some peculiar, something I had to find out. No, they're just general. When you get old enough, you'll find out what it means. And you will remember that in your life, all is vanity and dust and striving. And the best thing that we can do is serve the Lord. Ecclesiastes 12, verse 13. You've heard it so many times. The end of the matter, all has been heard. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment, every secret thing, whether good or evil. Remember when he said that there's no pleasure away from God? There is none. And there's no pleasure with God if I'm not right before Him. If I'm not trying to do His will. Jesus in the garden, Brother David referenced this in his Lord's Supper talk. Jesus said to God, Lord, please take this cup from me, yet not my will but thine be done. That is what is becoming a Christian is about. Submitting yourself to God, submitting yourself to Jesus. Becoming a servant of the Lord, entering the kingdom, you serve Him and He'll save you. The book of Ecclesiastes tells us the only thing that's good is the things from God and the things we can enjoy with God and with His people. If you're not a Christian, we would love for that to be you today. If you are a Christian, you need to repent, you need to confess sin and come forward to have prayer. We ask you to come forward as we stand and we sing.